actually took on that menial service of sweeping in front of the cart. And that is considered a very, even though it's lowly, you could say, a sweeper, it's great service to sweep the road in front of Jeconath. That even the king, he wanted to do that. So that's how special it is to do service. So all of you are going to be there in the parade and doing service to Jeconath, and it's a very special opportunity. So one thing I just like to add is there's many miracles that happen around Rath Yatra. And one little anecdote from when I was probably in high school, like when I was a teenager, my father and my siblings and I, we used to go to many of the eastern coast Rath Yatras. And one time we went to the Atlanta one, and we were walking, we had parked the car, actually, yeah, this is Atlanta. So we had parked the car and we were walking towards, we could see the cart in the distance. And all of a sudden we saw a homeless man who was carrying like some bags. He saw the cart at the same time as us, and he just dropped his bags and fell to the ground paying obeisances. And we were like, we were separated by street, so we weren't able to like talk to him or anything. We were seeing him. Then he just gathered up his bags and went on his way. And it was just one of those amazing experiences where you feel like, wow, he was, for whatever reason, his soul was drawn to doing that. So, when Jeconath comes down the road, many miracles can happen. So keep your eyes open for that. any questions or comments on that part? Okay, so we'll move on to Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, one more thing I wanted to share. Prabhupada, in 1973, there was the Rath Yatra in London, and there was a newspaper article where they put a picture of the cart, and they said that the title of the newspaper column was ISKCON Rath Yatra is rival to the Nelson column in Trafalgar Square. And Prabhupada writes about this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita purport. He writes about this incident, and he said the Nelson column is a very impressive statue of Lord Nelson, can be seen from a good distance. Just as the residents of Puri compared the Rath Yatra cart to Mount Sumeru, the residents of London consider the car rival to the Nelson monument. So you can see how pleased Prabhupada was with that. So he went from being a small child with his little cart to spreading Rath Yatra around the world. So how pleased he must have been to see that newspaper title and put it in his forever in his purport. So, okay. Yeah.
I was wondering if you could explain why Jeconath looks the way he looks and why, you know, the smile, because it's a lot different than
beautiful. Right. Yeah. There's a pastime behind that as well. But in brief, it's an incident where Krishna, Balaram and their sister Subhadra were overhearing the pastimes of the devotees of Vrindavan, and that the ecstasy of that made their eyes enlarge and huge smiles come across their face, and their arms extended and Subhadra's shrunk in. So it's kind of that. So that's how we depict them in those deity forms. It's coming from that same thing of them remembering the residents of Vrindavan in that mood of separation. Okay, so we'll do the Sanskrit for this verse here. It's a very famous verse. Tvai me nanya vishaya matir madhu pate sakrit ratim udvahatad adha gange vokham udanvati. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. Purport. We have three paragraphs, so three devotees can read.
Perfection of pure devotional service is attained when all attention is diverted towards the transcendental loving service of the Lord. To cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements, like affection for someone else. This is not possible. A living being, whoever he may be, must have this feeling of affection for others, because this is a symptom of life. The symptoms of life such as desire, anger, hankerings, feelings of attraction, etc., cannot be annihilated. Only the objective has to be changed. Desire cannot be negated, but in devotional service, the desire is changed only for the service of the Lord in place of desire for sense gratification. The so-called affection for family, society, country, etc., consists of different phases of sense gratification. When this desire is changed for the satisfaction of the Lord, it is called devotional service.
In the Bhagavad Gita, we can see that Arjuna desired not to fight with his brothers and relations just to satisfy his own personal desires. But when he heard the message of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, he changed his decision and served the Lord. And for his doing so, he became a famous devotee of the Lord. For it is declared in all the scriptures that Arjuna attained spiritual perfection by devotional service to the Lord in friendship. The fighting was there, the friendship was there, Arjuna was there, and Krishna was there. But Arjuna became a different person by devotional service. Therefore, the prayers of Kunti also indicated the same categorical changes in activities. Srimati Kunti wanted to serve the Lord without diversion, and that was her prayer. This unalloyed devotion is the ultimate goal of life. Our attention is usually diverted to the service of something which is non-godly or not in the program of the Lord. When the program is changed into the service of the Lord, that is to say, when the senses are purified in relation with the service of the Lord, it is called pure unalloyed devotional service. Srimati Kunta Devi wanted that perfection and prayed for it from the Lord.
Her affection for the Pandavas and the Rishis is not out of the range of devotional service, because the service of the Lord and the service of the devotees are identical. Sometimes service to the devotee is more valuable than service to the Lord. But here, the affection of Kunti Devi for the Pandavas and the Rishis was due to family relation. This tie of affection in terms of material relation is the relation of Maya, because the relations of the body or the mind are due to the influence of the external energy. Relations of the soul established in relation with the Supreme Soul are factual relations. When Kunti Devi wanted to cut off the family relation, she meant to cut off the relation of the skin. The skin relation is the cause of material bondage, but the relation of the soul is the cause of freedom. This relation of the soul to the soul can be established by the medium of the relation with the super soul. Seeing in the darkness is not seeing, but seeing by the light of the sun means to see the sun and everything else which was unseen in the darkness. That is the way of devotional service.
So what a hope-giving purport, isn't it? We all have desire, and Prabhupada's saying that's a natural, this attraction, these feelings of our attraction are a symptom of life. So we don't have to get rid of them, we just have to direct them towards Krishna. So I found when I was reading this, all three paragraphs, that there's some hope-giving, really encouraging statements in this purport. I want to go back briefly to Kunti, because we read all these prayers, and she says here, "Our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your feet. Therefore, it appears beautiful. But when you leave, it will no longer be so." And then she says that everything's flourishing, all the cities and villages and the herbs and grains, the trees, the rivers. But as soon as that's because of your glancing over them. So it's interesting because we just talked about Rath Yatra, and it's a similar mood that she's having here. She's anticipating Krishna's separation and realizing that everything that appears beautiful now is because Krishna is present. And as soon as he leaves, that they will not consider that beautiful anymore. So everything to them was beautiful in relation to Krishna. Have you ever thought about which personalities you would like to meet from the Bhagavatam? Yeah, Sisa. I've often thought that I would love to meet Queen Kunti, like how special that would be to meet her. And I think when we ask ourselves this question, like if we, because the Srimad Bhagavatam is alive, it's a scripture that we can actually have a relationship with. And the personalities in the Srimad Bhagavatam are also, can be alive to us when we interact with them on a, we heard about personalism, radical personalism over the weekend. And so if we interact with these great personalities with that mood, yes, they're not gone. This is not like 5,000 years ago, we can't access Queen Kunti anymore. She's still there for us through prayer, and we can still have a relationship with her, you know, and beg for her mercy to get the similar mood that she has here. So when we ask ourselves the question of, okay, I would like to meet this great personality, what would I say to them? What would I ask them? And that can immediately start that relationship, that thought. What would I ask if Queen Kunti was suddenly before me? What would I pray to her for? What would I, you know, like that. So just making it come alive to us, because sometimes it can be monotonous. Oh, we're just reading a lot of verses, but remembering the personality behind these prayers. So I want to ask you, so in this verse from today, it says, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. So who here, show of hands, would like their attraction to be constantly drawn unto Krishna? Okay. Haribo. Okay, so everyone's here for the same reason. That's why we're all living here. So my question to you, and I'd like you to take just a minute to reflect on this, is why do you want your attraction to constantly be drawn onto Krishna? And I don't mean it from a philosophical sense of why that's good for us and so on, but why personally to you do you want your attraction to be constantly drawn to Krishna without diversion to anyone else? So just take a moment. You can close your eyes. Just think about that in your life. What is it about Krishna that you want to have that same attraction, unlimited attraction to Krishna? Okay, you can open your eyes. And this can be very personal. It's our own individual relationship with Krishna and why we would want to aspire for this one-pointedness, right? This flowing like a river to Krishna. But if anybody would like to share like a sentence or so, if you feel inspired, feel free to share. Did something come out to you? Like what is it about? Why do you want to be drawn to Krishna? Yeah. Janaki?
I was just thinking, I think maybe this is a very like beginner level answer, but I was just thinking that all my relationships, I might not know Krishna so well, but all my relationships with devotees are so sweet that I imagine that if I had that attraction to Krishna, probably my relationships with everybody in the whole world would also be just much, much sweeter.
Nice. Yeah. There's that, what do you call it? It's the proof in the taste. Yeah, how does that expression go? Yeah, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. Yeah, so you're sampling the representatives of, you know, the parts and parcels of Krishna. So that's a nice explanation.
The image that came to my mind, maybe it's because it's Radha Yatra, but Gulab Jamun. Krishna is kind of so sweet and like gullible like a Gulab Jamun.
Thank you. Krishna is sweeter than the sweetest Gulab Jamun. Yeah. Any other thoughts?
I just wanted to say that I feel very comfortable with Krishna. And a lot of the time outside of that, I feel very uncomfortable, constantly pulled in many ways and forced to do things I don't like to do, and it's just tough. But when I'm with Krishna, it's like, you know, I'm okay. This person loves me, this person accepts me, I can exist here.
Wow, nice. Yeah, it's like your home in that sense, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mine's also something similar. I feel very steady, feel grounded. In that relationship with Krishna, there's less bewilderment, there's less doubts, just I feel hugged.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really wonderful. Yes, you can see all the ways that we all share in common that same desire, that yearning of the heart to to want to be drawn to Krishna, like she's describing here. So if you think about a rushing river, I'm sure you've all seen one. Like sometimes you'll drop a leaf in, right? And then you just watch the leaf go right down without any, nothing can stop it because the flow is so strong. Or if you've ever been on one of those, like when I was a kid, this water park that we had where there was I don't know what they call those things. You're going around like this water pool thing that just pulls you, the current. Lazy River, yeah. So, and you can't really swim against it. They did call it that, Lazy River. So it's like a current and you have to just, it's just a relaxing thing. You're on a tube, but it just forces you to go around. You can't really go against it. So that idea. So when she's talking about the river, like the Ganges flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be drawn to you. So just think about this rushing river and nothing's going to stop it. The river's going to go over and through things and like even carve things out of stone. It's just going to go, right? So we can ask ourselves in real introspection is, yes, we all want this, but we can also reflect on when am I kind of like trying to clamber off the side of that river and get off? Or when am I distracted by, you know, so am I really just sticking with that, this intensity that she's talking about? Or am I also just kind of, well, I'm going to hold on to this log for a bit and try to enjoy, you know? So applying this to our lives, we can think about, yes, I want this. And what are the things that do divert me? Because she's speaking about let nothing divert me, right? So this is a very high level of Krishna consciousness, like just purely Krishna focused. So the hope-giving thing about this purport is because we are, Prabhupada says here, it's natural for us to have feelings of affection for others. So it's not like we're joining this Hare Krishna movement and we all have to become monks and monkettes, I guess you could say. Like we don't have to isolate ourselves in castles up on the hill top and live super austere lives away from others and avoid getting attached to others. That's actually very difficult because that's against the soul's inclination. The soul's inclined towards attachment and affection and so on, right? Because we're all connected with Krishna in that way. So what we do have to do here, and Prabhupada says in the next paragraph, Arjuna attained spiritual perfection by devotional service to the Lord in friendship. So he became a different person by devotional service. So Prabhupada saying the fighting was going on, Krishna was there, Arjuna was there, so on. All the external things were there, but Arjuna became a different person by connecting his fighting to Krishna, by connecting his activity to Krishna. And then he's saying, similarly, Kunti's doing the same thing. So she's, and even you can see in the last few quotes or the verses here that she's connecting even what the cities and villages are doing to Krishna, like the flourishing of the cities and villages and so on. So we just have to plug into Krishna's program, he says. So sometimes Prabhupada says we're diverted by things that are non-godly or not in the program of the Lord. So that's an interesting phrasing, not in the program. So when the program is changed to the service of the Lord, that is to say, when the senses are purified in relation with the service of the Lord, it's called pure unalloyed devotional service. And that's where it becomes very encouraging because we can take almost anything. There's some activities that we can't directly connect to Krishna, but most of our activities in this, in our day-to-day life can be consciously connected to Krishna and plugged into Krishna's program. So that means we don't have to worry so much about subtracting, but about adding Krishna. And it's not that difficult. And that's when it becomes like, wow, yeah, this is Krishna consciousness is not that hard. I just have to add the one in front of the zeros. That's what Prabhupada said. Krishna's the one and all the zeros, right? So I do have affection for this friend or this family member or this child or so on. I just need to remember. So how I'm going to ask you, how would you connect an affection that you have currently of a family member or a friend? How would you connect that to Krishna? Yeah.
In the Catholic tradition, which I grew up, I have a goddaughter. So she's a baby. And naturally, I'm attracted to babies. I think they're so cute. So with her, I just chant Hare Krishna to her. And I give her prasadam. So I try to just remember that no one else in her family will bring her closer to Krishna, because they're not really, their backs are towards Krishna. So I need to be that for her. So, yeah.
Nice, thank you. Yeah. Lucky baby. Any other thoughts? Yeah.
I would say similarly for adults as well, that you help them come to Krishna in some way, shape, or form. You yourself be that example. And help them in their devotional service, help them remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be a distraction.
So help them remember in a way that's they can, like, to, I guess, at their level, right? Because some people might not be Bhagavatam ready, but.
One thing I like to think of is facilitate thought.
Yeah.
Mahama Prabhu has a kind of slogan thing that I like to help people think, or something like that.
Nice. That's really, yeah, so really practical.
I like to do that. Just consider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Yes.
Also, I think we can think of those people, friends, family, as just as spirit souls, servants of Krishna, and not someone who are meant to serve us, serve our happiness, but just objectively try to see sometimes that they are individual souls connected with Krishna, just temporarily having a relationship with us. So, they're not, rather than trying to serve each other directly, the center should be Krishna for the relationship.
Nice. Yeah, that's a really practical meditation to reflect on. These souls that I think are mine, or that are meant for my enjoyment, are actually Krishna's servants, and they're just temporarily here with me. But to see them in that way, that they're parts of Krishna. Yeah. Yeah.
And also, I think you just do Krishna Bhakta's things together. Sit down, like Krishna Bhakta, go with the kind of sacred, devotional things.
Yeah, just add Krishna. Like even, some of these vacations that you take, right? You go to stay somewhere nice, and then you do these activities together that are fun. And even like a person walking down the street would agree that those are fun activities, but you're doing it you're making them spiritualized. Krishna, Prabhupada called this Krishnaized, like Krishnaizing something. So that's a nice term. Yes, Janaki.
Whenever I go home, usually I only go to this year, and they're nice, but whenever I go and see them now, the last like couple of times, I don't like, I've been like very strict about like just eating whatever I cook and like prasadam and stuff. So when I go, I'm like, okay, yeah, we can have dinner together and I'll cook. And so the last like probably like 4 or 5 times that I've been home, I cook like a big feast. And so like it's, at first they're like a little bit annoyed, like, how did we eat our food? But now it's like, all right, Jonathan's coming home, she's making food. And so in that way, like, I get to have a lot of fun, like cooking all this nice stuff and making an offering and like feeling like nice about that. And then also like they're definitely like, they got over it, they're happy.
yeah, that's a quick way to the heart of someone is through food. So that's a really practical way. So I wanted to mention that we have this tendency in our society to be binary thinkers, right? So in this verse where she's saying, let my mind be focused completely without any diversion on anyone else, a immature way to approach that verse would be to think, okay, everyone else gone, Krishna only, right? And like, kind of this all or nothing. But if we extend, as we mature in spiritual life, we start to realize that every single person we encounter is part of Krishna. Everything in this material world is part of Krishna. It's Krishna's energy. And so then we don't see in a separatist way. We think, oh yeah, everything's part of Krishna. So it's not Krishna drop everything else. It's, wow, how can I serve Krishna with everything, all these resources through all these relationships. And that's maturity. Because I think in the early days of ISKCON, there was a tendency towards run to Krishna and then maybe forget some of the practical considerations and the relationships on the way. Another thing about relationships in this material world is there are opportunities for us to practice to one day we're going to, when we're pure devotees of Krishna, have this unmotivated, uninterrupted, completely selfless desire to serve. That's us at our core. That's the real nature of the soul. So in going through this material journey in this life, if we can practice that with the people that we encounter, those are opportunities for us to grow in our spiritual life. Let me practice being generous of spirit. Let me practice not holding back. Let me work through this envy. Let me be like that. And we can practice with the relationships that we have. And I love how Prabhupada says that the soul-to-soul relationship is what's eternal, is what's there. Whereas, you know, when we're the soul-to-soul instead of the body-to-the-body, right? So if we forget, if we kind of get engrossed in I'm this body, I'm this mind, and that person's their body and their mind, and we're just kind of on that superficial level, it's almost like we're not even really communicating because our souls are just dormant, right? They're not really involved in that moment. But if we're actively seeing ourselves as a spirit soul part of Krishna and the other person, and we're having those deeper talks like you mentioned, then it's just really, it's actually eternalizing because it's connecting through Krishna, who is eternal, right? So then it's become something more substantial. So if you think about yourself in a desert, so, okay, maybe we haven't all been in a desert, but have you ever seen the, when you're driving on the highway and it's super hot and that kind of miragey, like, what'd you say? Heat waves. Yeah. And they kind of create this and you're like, it looks like maybe a little forest or something ahead. And there's that saying, if you're in the desert and you're totally, you know, dehydrated and so on, that you can start to see like things in the distance, the mirages. Hopefully none of us have been in that. That's why I said, I don't think anybody's been in that extreme of a situation to picture this, but the analogy is there of a mirage. And so imagine that you're seeing a mirage and it's like, oh, you think you're getting there and then it's gone. And then, oh, more sand. Oh, it's there. There's a city. Or no, it's just sand. And then suddenly in that state, when you think there's a mirage, suddenly a real person walks in, right? How relieving it would be for a person who is trying to find shelter or be rescued from a desert. So similarly, we're in this material world interacting with so many people on the mind and body level, but suddenly a real interaction comes in. Here's a person who's acting from their soul and they're really there, like stepping into that mirage of this material world. Like here's a real soul-to-soul relationship and how special that is. I think that's why these relationships that we form in the ashram are just life-lasting, because they're so, there's something, you know, even if we grind sometimes, like, you know, the rocks in the tumbler, like, you know, the ashram life, but it's so touching to the heart to be seen as a spirit soul by others and to see others as a spirit soul and to work together to serve Krishna. So it's these, we can feel that it becomes like our eternal family, even though we're not blood related. So yeah, yes, please.
I was thinking that if you were in a desert and you were dehydrated and you kept seeing all these mirages, you just kept seeing and it was never real, and then somebody real did walk up to you, you would have trouble believing that for a little while. Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess, where all of these rock tumbly experiences happen, is that we don't truly like believe it yet because we're so conditioned to think that it's all fake.
Yeah, and we're also very lifetimes of being bruised by other people's egos, you know, so it takes time for us to open our hearts to others and trust. Even our relationship with Krishna can be affected by our history of lifetimes in this world where we've been disappointed and hurt and so on. And so for that, that's why the for each of us on our own can make it a point to reach out to others in a way that will be like fan their spark and be of service to them in that mood, so that they don't have to feel that, at least with one person, right? So they can feel, I can at least trust one devotee. So if we can each do that ourselves in our own hearts, then imagine the whole community, what it would be like. So then as soon as someone enters, they'll be like, oh, I'm at home. Like you were saying that you feel at home, and what you were saying, both of you are kind of feeling at peace, like grounded with Krishna. So yeah, any thoughts, questions, comments? Yes.
So like the first day that I arrived here at the ashram and several of the devotees like walked into the temple room, it was like, I looked at them and I'm like, I don't recognize your face, but it was like my soul remembered them somehow. I'm like, I know you. I know your soul. My soul knows your soul. It was a very interesting and like dynamic interaction. Yeah.
Mm, thank you. Yeah, that reminds me of just, it's encouraging to think that those devotees that we become attached to, that we're eternally connected, that we're not going to, time doesn't separate those devotees who are serving together. So that's nice that we'll be together in the, you know, always as long as we're all serving Krishna together. Yeah.
The original question, I can't remember exactly how you worded it. Like what attracts us to, what, why do we want our mind to be attracted to Krishna? I was thinking that because if our mind is always attracted to Krishna, nothing that happens will be ever wrong. Like we could be in hell or we could be facing like, you know, calamity after calamity, and it's always perfect because we're thinking of the Lord, and that's perfect in itself, no matter what the externals are.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's wonderful. Yes.
I just had a continuation to it. So often we act on our desires when we are attracted to something, and we get it often. I mean, it happens. So the mind often asking, what next? What next? It's sort of an infinite need, and Krishna's that. So it's like that infinite need of fulfilling an attraction, and there's just one spot, like the culmination of all of your journeys at this one point, and you meet Krishna, and your attraction just, you know, is in the right place. So.
Yeah, that's such a good, I like that point, because Krishna's infinitely able to satisfy us, and we have infinite desire, and so it's like a perfect fit. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
I'm wondering, how can we remove this mentality, like, what's it for me, the selfish moment of doing emotional service, of not serving Krishna, and not only for his pleasure, but also that makes me happy?
Well, you know, we don't need to worry so much about trying to not enjoy it. Like say someone gives you a wonderful plate of prasad and you're like, I'm gonna just not really enjoy this, just think about it. I mean, it's a little artificial, especially in the beginning as we're advancing Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada created a formula that was full of happiness, like dancing in kirtan, all these festivals, right? It was supposed to be sources of fulfillment for our desire, but through over time and over years it happens automatically, and especially as we age. That's one of the blessings of aging, actually, and also of struggles in our bodies, whatever that might be, disease or so on, that it we gradually lose the ability to enjoy material life as much. And and it becomes easier to just focus on Krishna. Would you like to add something to that question?
Very good. Very good point, Gurangi, but the living entity is pleasure-seeking by nature. So it's expected that we'll take pleasure in serving Krishna. And the more that we do take pleasure in serving Krishna, the more pleased Krishna is. You see? So if we make Krishna happy, Krishna makes us happy. And when we feel happy, we want to make Krishna happier. And then he wants to make us happy. So being joyful in devotional service is a sign of...
Happy.
Right, you're not big. Like Satsarupa Maharaj told this story when he first became a devotee on the Sunday feast. Prabhupada was serving the feast, the first feast he went to, and he came around with seconds on sweet rice. And Satsarupa Maharaj, I like sweet rice so much, I should say no. I don't want to have any more sweet. I want to be austere. I really want to please Krishna by being austere. And then he brought around the regular rice, and he said, okay, yes. And then they gave him the regular rice, but even that had cheese in it and everything. And so he just couldn't get away from enjoying his rice.
It reminds me of that story in the airplane where the devotees were thinking, oh, Charlie Chaplin's on the the movie screen, we're gonna go read our Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. And then they look over and Prabhupada's like chortling, laughing at the, at the film. So. Yeah.
Prabhupada said that his comedy is original and anything that's original is coming from Krishna.
Yeah, he saw Krishna in there. He added the one in front of that. So I wanted to just end on one brief witty thing that Srila Prabhupada said in connection to mirages. So somebody challenged Prabhupada, said, do you know, he was challenging that Prabhupada, you know everything, the kind of idea. Like, do you know how many windows are in the Empire State Building? And Prabhupada said, how many drops of water are there in a mirage? Something like that. How many drops of water in a mirage? So it's so quick and witty and just really to the point that there's this material world is, it doesn't really matter how many windows are. but Prabhupada knew the essence with the real important things, right? So. Yeah. Should we end here? Thank you all so much for engaging. Hare Krishna. Have a nice Bharatiyatra.